You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Too Short a Season. I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And the synopsis for tonight's show is an elderly Starfleet admiral hides a deadly secret as he leads the Enterprise in a hostage rescue mission. This is the 16th episode of Season 1 of The Next Generation. The original release date was the 8th of February, 1988. It was written by DC Fontana and Michael Michaelian, and the story was by Michael Michaelian. It was directed by Rob Bowman. The guest stars of tonight are Clayton Rohner as Admiral Mark Jameson, Marsha Hunt as Anne Jameson, and Michael Pataki as Karnas. So, what did we think about this episode? From my perspective, I think this episode has a lot of... It actually has a couple of big ideas that are kind of traditional, kind of Star Trek-y ideas. Unfortunately, I think the execution on this one really lets it down. What about you, Lou?
I don't think it was executed enough. It should have been put out of its misery. It was written by Michael Michaelian. Michaelian. I have to agree with that. Only an alien could have actually wrote this episode. The concept, you're right, the concept is interesting, but the execution, it needs to be put out of its misery, but we'll get to that later. But first, before we do, how about we do some forum feedback?
Okie dokie.
We left off with the big goodbye, and we're going to start off with Colin, my bud Colin. Just finished listening an episode where Wesley saves the day, kind of. Makes you wonder why they don't just give him his own ship. Also, why send him to the Academy at all? Clearly, he knows more than the entire engineering crew. There are some great elements in this one. Beverly getting jealous. Picard revealing in the Hollow novel that we see him returning to time and again, which is continuity, by the way. But the holodeck character is dissolving at the end, plus if I turn it off, they'll disappear a bit. I mean, really. So, when you're on the holodeck and you say computer and program, why don't you disappear with the program? Also, to highlight something you said about the interaction on the holodeck, I think there is a difference between engaging in a holo novel in a holo program. Parameters would be different. Fascinating, interesting. And so he gave it a rating, but he broke our rules and gave it a 3.5. So that's okay, because the listener can have what they want. So what do you think about what he says there? The difference between a holo novel and a holo program. I can't see them as being different. Do you?
Well, I mean, maybe I don't want to necessarily speak for Colin, but I think he might, what he might be referring to is at the beginning at least, and also you do see this come up more off. You see this come up at the end as well. You know, you can have a holo program where you recreate things and you recreate scenarios and whatnot, and you're kind of living in a kind of a virtual reality kind of world. Whereas with holo novel, I assume he's speaking about instances where you have to take on a role and take on a persona, and you effectively become the character. So things like, do you remember in Voyager when they had that, I think it was a Hawaiian beach party holo program? I would throw that into a holo program where you just, you know, go around and just hang around versus the Captain Proton kind of holo novel where you're expected to play to the game and effectively complete whatever task is thrown at you.
Oh, just the way they would do it too? That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I got out of it. Actually, by the way, I actually listened to this episode earlier on today. It's for whatever reason, it's been part of my backlog, and one piece of feedback that I have is that, Lou, you keep asking me questions that I really can't answer. And you say, oh, so why did I do this? And what about that? And this doesn't make any sense. And I'm, because I'm such a defender, I sit there and I'll go, well, and I think as fast as I can to defend the show. And it was very obvious to me that that was happening.
That's all right.
But anyway.
I stopped putting crickets on.
Let's move down to Kieran McDuff. He said, not a whole lot to add to this one. I think he covered all the holodeck issues that were needed covering. Good job. His rating, he said, has to be a 2, I'm afraid. Being scared of the holodeck because you might get deleted is a big hole for me. It definitely suffers from being early in the run, and he hadn't ironed out all of the concepts yet. Fortunately, the holodeck stories get better.
Right. Yeah, some do. Some keep following the old cliche, but... yeah. Okay. And the next one comes from Medic1849, I believe, Blair. Says, good review, guys. Thank you. I really enjoyed the discussion about the holodeck. I think you could discuss this topic forever and never really have solid answers. It seems like the holodeck rules change from episode to episode and season to season. With so many holodeck episodes spanning so many series, it's easy to go back to season 1 TNG and critique what is wrong with this holodeck episode. As for your discussion on Picard going to the holodeck rather than continuing to prepare for a speech, I find that when I have a big presentation, interview, project, etc., I like to listen to the podcast while en route to it. I've usually already prepared enough, so I like to wind down and take my mind off it. It helps me relax, and I can end up doing quite well in the end. And I'm able to catch up on my podcast at the same time. Good point. And, he gives this one also a 2 out of 5. Most season 1 Trek gets a 2 or lower rating, Medic says. You know, it's a good point, and I never thought of that. I'm going to give you a real-life correlation to what I believe he is saying. There's a song, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it comes from an old 70s group named Starbuck. According to Wikipedia, Starbuck was formed in the middle 70s by keyboard vocalist and producer Bruce Blackman, who, by the way, is a very handsome white Blackman. He and his fellow performer and marimba player, Bo Wagner, who's now actually a PhD, made it all the way to number 3 on the Billboard Hot 100 in 1976 with their debut song, Moonlight Feels Right. Since I've mainly listened to podcasts for the last 10 years, I hadn't heard this song for a very, very long time. But for some reason, it doesn't get the playtime on the oldie station that it deserves. But anyway, I heard it on the American Top 40 with Casey Kasem on a repeat, I think a couple months ago on Sirius XM. And just like a light bulb flicking on, it resonated with me for some reason. It's just an excellent song. And I tell you what, I got permission from Bruce Blackman to actually use a little of his song, so I'm going to give you a little snippet right here of Moonlight Feels Right, the awesome playing, especially that marimba. We'll lay back and observe the constellations and watch the moon smiling bright. I'll play the radio on southern stations, cause southern builds a hill at night. You say you came to Baltimore from Ole Miss, a class of 7-4 gold ring. The eastern moon looks ready for a wet kiss to make the tide rise again. Moonlight feels right. Moonlight feels right. That's a song I kind of became obsessed with. But anyway, I found myself playing the song over and over again, and I wanted to try and learn it, just like Captain Picard's got to learn this greeting for this species. But anyway, you know, something strange happened. You know, I was having a little difficulty getting all the words down, but something strange happened. I was driving home one night, playing the song, and of course I had the lyrics wrong, went to bed, woke up the next day while I was driving to work, decided to put the song on again, and I found something very interesting. I had every lyric down. I mean, every word, word for word, I had it perfect. So, it's amazing. 8 hours earlier, I was still stuttering with the song, and here I go the next morning, I've got it perfect. So I guess it's true. You know, the brain is building mental pathways while we sleep, so it makes sense that Picard needed a break from the dialogue to help absorb it. So, anyway, I'll have a link to Starbuck's Wikipedia page, as well as a couple videos, one of the song that was done in the 70s, which is really awesome. Man, you see the long hair on Kenny, the drummer, and you just see, you know, Dr. Bo back then with his shirt completely wide open, like massive chest hair, as he's playing that marimba. And then I'm also going to include a recent video that they did, when they did the same song. A couple of the band members had passed on over the years, so there was a couple new faces. But it's amazing. After all these years, these boys still have it, so check it out. It'll be on the main page. So, anyway, it must be true that, you know, time away from something that you're trying to remember, and it will help you. And does that make any sense to you, Doc?
I think it makes perfect sense. And I would go further and say that listening to podcasts to help you through your daily life is also gets a thumbs up from me.
Oh, yeah. I do it every day at work. I take notes on websites that I need to visit, new podcasts. And if somebody says something about a podcast, I'll check it out. So,
okay. So moving down to Captain Proton, who is our final commenter. He said, "Can this episode be any worse or any better? I don't know. But I do think it is a good introduction of what the holodeck can be used for. The crew seems a little taken by it, but who wouldn't be? To head you off at the pass, Lou, every episode gets a 5 from me. Why, you ask? Well, I answer your question with a question. Why not?"
Mm-hmm. And so, of course, I had to reply to that because I thought, well, that just sounds silly because, you know, Ben does a Star Trek Voyager podcast called The Delta Quadrant, which, as I say, I am writing it down. And, Ben, you don't give fives. You very rarely ever give fives. So, I can't see why Voyager is any worse than TNG. In some ways, I thought Voyager was better than TNG. But, in most ways, not. No, I'd rather have TNG than Voyager in the end. But I like Voyager's premise, as I've said a million times already. So, no, I don't see all of TNG getting fives. It's just unrealistic. You can't give even the episode we're talking about today a 5. You just can't. There's no way. But anyway, thank you guys for the feedback. Whether you're right or I'm right or you're wrong or I'm right, it doesn't matter. We just appreciate you sending messages to us.
Actually, Lou, before we start the show proper, can I speak about the latest convention that's been announced for London?
Oh, there's a London convention. Lucky you. Go ahead.
Yes. So, I mean, I think people have known about this for a couple of weeks, but at the time that we're recording, it's relatively new that the guest list has been announced. And unlike the last time when they kind of drip-fed us the cast, or, you know, the crew, I suppose, they've kind of gone all big bang and they've come out with everyone on day one. Listeners in the UK will probably have known that 2 years ago there was a Destination Star Trek London event, which was the first, you know, proper Star Trek convention in the UK for, I think it was over 10 years, well over 10 years. I think it was back in the days of TNG that, you know, anything was reasonably put on. We got the 5 captains back then, and it was quite good. Anyway, they're following it up this year with Destination Star Trek 3, because in between the last one and this one, they had one in Germany. And we actually have a pretty good cast list, to be honest, and a lot of people from the Next Generation. I think last time round, the big thing that they had was that they were going to get the 5 captains and it was supposed to be for the first time that they would get the five captains on stage. This year, they don't have the five captains. They still have William Shatner. Leonard Nimoy is promised to join via Skype, which is the irony. Jerry Ryan comes over to the UK for the first time ever, I think it is. And we've got pretty much everyone from The Next Generation except for Captain Picard, which I would like to hope that he would be added, but I don't think that's realistic. So, you know, Riker, Data, Worf, Geordi, Crusher, Troy, Yar, Q is popping over. So a whole bunch of people from Star Trek Next Generation are coming by. And yeah, I'm planning to go over and, you know, I think that I think I'm going to try my best to find, you know, fellow like-minded Trekkies either on the forum or, you know, elsewhere to come along with me, because I generally don't get the opportunity to go along with family and stuff. They're either too young to wait in a queue and wait patiently in a queue for someone that they don't quite recognize, because, you know, Captain Kirk doesn't look like that, does he?
No.
they don't recognize him being 85 years old nowadays, or the wife doesn't really have the greatest patience of these kind of events. So hopefully going to find a whole bunch of fans to go along with, and I look forward to this. And this is going to be on the from the 3rd to the 5th of October in London.
Man, the guest list is phenomenal. I mean, wow, I'm looking at that guest list. You guys are so lucky. So, one thing you have to ask William Shatner is, how would Captain Kirk say Denny Crane? Denny Crane! You know, because on Boston Legal, he always walks around Denny Crane. I mean, he says his name constantly all through the series. So, how would Captain Kirk say the name Denny Crane?
Mm-hmm.
So, have a lot of fun with that. Film it if you can. Yes, William Shatner, Leonard Nimoy, 40 of Triple D, excuse me, 7 of 9. Carl Urban. Oh, really? Why? Okay, Uhura, Riker, Data, Worf, Geordi, Troy, Crusher, Q.
I don't know, right at the bottom, actually, at the bottom it also gets interesting. I'm actually really, really happy that people like Nicholas Meyer get invited to these things. Obviously, the writer-director of Star Trek II, Star Trek VI as well. You know, I think he deserves a lot of credit for everything that he's done to the franchise. And then others, I do like that. It warms my heart when I see the long tail of not necessarily the A-rated stars, but the people towards the end. And we are getting the actress that played Lao is coming over, which, I mean, perfectly fine.
Hey, see if she'd be, you know, someone like her, we have stand a much better chance. See if she'd ever be willing to come on and talk about her role.
Yeah, for Lao. Perhaps.
Yeah, Haley Todd. Yeah, see if she'd be interested.
And we also get both the Traveler.
You get Molly!
And we get Molly O'Brien.
Molly O'Brien. Okay.
I don't know if she's done conventions before, but it seems, you know, apparently she's 25 now.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, there'd be one I'd like to get on the show when, you know, when Molly is born. That'd be kind of cute. Okay. All right. Great. Well, everyone, join the doctor there. I'm sure he will meet up with people. I'm sure, you know, tell him when you're coming, when you'll be there, and maybe you guys can all meet up somewhere and have a little get together, bring something, and interview some of our fans too that actually meet up with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was it's a good kind of like event to meet up with people and to you know, to get to see the community, I suppose.
Sure. If it wasn't a 14-hour flight, and, you know, and I had the money for it, I would enjoy that. Okay, so that's great. Good. Okay, so, you know, I would prefer to talk about the convention rather than the episode.
Actually, it's a relatively good week, right, to have to have news.
Yes, that's great. And you said, and when was it again? Remind us.
It's the 3rd through to the 5th of October.
Great.
This year.
So when we encounter other bad episodes, we can remind everyone about this. Okay. Well, anyway, you know us. We're still going to talk a nice long time about this. I do have two pages. So why don't you tell everyone what the premise of this episode is and some of the things you observed. Is there anything that you noticed that you never noticed before or anything? I kind of like to do those once in a while.
Yes. By the way, there are a couple of, remembering back to season one of Next Gen, there are a couple of episodes that kind of all merge into one for some reason. things like, I now have an idea of which episode is which, but when I think back, I think, okay, Angel One versus Justice versus Too Short a Season versus When the Bow Breaks versus Haven, they all kind of merge into one piece of terribleness often. Mm-hmm. So I can never quite remember, but then yeah, this is the episode with the Admiral, the old Admiral. Mm-hmm. And he's been effectively called out on a decision that he made 45 years ago. And I think there's like a real nexus of a good Star Trek concept here. At its very heart, what it's trying to do, it's trying to say that, even with the best intentions, you sometimes can have unforeseen consequences when you are dealing with, when you're dealing with conflict, when you're dealing with armed struggles. And it does have it has that relatively sophisticated message at its core. You then also throw in the fact that it's a kind of a Fountain of Youth story as well going on. And you must be able to do something with this within like a science fiction kind of like a world. However, these two things collide against each other. It's really not well put together. And, perhaps the thing I noticed most this time was really that the high concept is pretty good, but the way that it's put onto the screen is not good.
Right.
I'm not entirely sure what it comes down to, by the way. I don't think in my mind I've nailed down exactly what the problem was. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Almost the same what you're saying. I think we could very well have done without the de-aging thing. I think if they had spent the time with the de-aging thing and focused on the consequences of what he was doing, or even him trying to extricate himself from the situation of what he's done in the past and trying, solve the today's situation, I think that still would have been a lot better than having the older-than-old Admiral in his goofy-ass chair rolling around the ship until he gets on the bridge and then jumps out of that chair and walks down without falling, I couldn't believe, and to go to Khan. The whole, well, Admiral, you sure pulled one number over on us thing, I think we could have done without.
I kind of agree. We learn a little bit about, the consequences of your actions, right? How he has his comeuppance at the end, how you could have put a story around that kind of moral dilemma he was placed in. Certainly because it was mentioned that, many people had tried to negotiate, did not succeed. He managed to negotiate, although he caved in, but he did save the hostages, and he had to then live with the consequences of that. And that's good. That's good going. The stuff about the de-aging is just that he wanted to be fighting fit, so he took a whole load of drugs. That there's a little bit of a discussion between him and his wife about how he was supposed to have some for her, but ended up taking it. And to me, it's just it doesn't really go anywhere. It seems tacked on, to be honest, and maybe it completely was tacked on. Maybe the two writers that approached it, or the two screenwriters that approached this, had different ideas of what this episode should have been.
Plus, I'll add one other thing. It seems like we're going to jump to the end for just a minute here, but the final resolution, I think, was a cop out. I think it was the easy way out for the writers to just kill off the character. I think instead of having him de-age to death, there should have been a point where he stopped, and that's why I say get rid of the de-aging thing altogether, and let's find out what the consequences of his actions in the past are going to be today. Him dying just pretty much ties the whole thing up in a nice little bow, and it's time to warp out. That's not enough.
No, it fundamentally means that one way or another, he doesn't get, he doesn't have to answer for what he's done in any way.
No.
Other than to his maker, perhaps, but he doesn't have to answer for the decisions he made. And it is made clear in the episode that the decisions were made were his. He wasn't following orders, and he hadn't reconciled those decisions with kind of command. He was keeping that from command still. They didn't know what he had done. And you fundamentally do just get, you get a cop out on the, you know, what are the consequences of your actions.
And how did they not know what he did? I mean, it makes no sense that he doesn't know. Where did all those weapons come from? He didn't just manufacture them himself. Somebody had to know where weapons are going.
No, that's true. Although I can buy the idea that a junior officer or someone with access might have turned a blind eye. I think that's, okay. So that didn't worry me too much. But at the same time, you kind of get I don't get the impression the weapons that they talk about. I mean, we're not talking about it looks like we're talking about rifles, mm-hmm. and like handguns. It doesn't look like something that would prolong a civil war, or it would be a deciding factor. It's not as if you're massively given technology to one side that isn't, that's completely beyond anyone else.
Except for each side thought that they were the only ones getting it. So when they went into this battle, they went into it kind of blinded and surprised, and they were already screwed. They had no choice but to continue on.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's true. But if you were to hand over weapons to people, I doubt they would still work in 20 years' time or 30 years' time or whatever.
Really? Where's the battery pack?
Yeah. So it must... Well, I know the concept is that, you can obviously ignite a flame and, things can carry on forever based on, people still being upset about what has happened before. But to me, it didn't sound like it was such a game changer. Anyway, Lou, let me ask you a question about the production values, at least on this episode. What do you think about the makeup?
Oh, bad. Bad. It just looked terrible. I think they went so far to an extreme in his makeup just so they can bring it back down to his cute little youthful self. I think they went too far, over the top. What about you?
I tend to agree, although I for whatever reason, I have a soft spot for the extreme old age,
really?
Variant of the Admiral. He seems, it's humorous. It's almost too humorous. So when he comes in, I mean, for anyone that's not seen the episode, you see him in at least three different states: when he's young, when he's supposed to be middle-aged, and when he's, in his 80s. And when he's in his 80s as well, he's also in the wheelchair. I thought that the wheelchair looked relatively cool.
You did?
But
maybe for the 80s, but now as I look at it, not really. I mean, even the little front door he had on it didn't line up very well.
That's true. But I thought the heavier makeup was okay. When compared to the middle-aged makeup that he was wearing.
Right.
Because when he only had like the thinner makeup,
yeah.
You could almost see which parts were the makeup, uh-huh. and how thick they were, and if he were to shake his head vigorously, what would fly off. Because I thought that middle stage was particularly painful. Although credit to the guy that played the Admiral, I thought that it wasn't horrendous in the sense that I thought that. You could tell that he was getting more physically active as he got younger. His voice was, clearing up. It wasn't a complete disaster from a performance standpoint, in my opinion, anyway.
Kind of, except for when he was de-aging and he kept getting frisky on Annie, almost putting him, thrusting himself on her.
Well, he started, he was like that, almost immediately, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Right. Even when he was still in his 85-year-old man costume, he was he said, "I hope you're heading to the bedroom." Yeah, very, very worrying.
Okay, well then, so we see Admiral Mark Jameson as a prime example of why retirement should be strictly enforced. And, you know, perhaps maybe the resolution isn't such a bad thing after all. And if you don't know what the resolution is, we'll find out later in a couple other seasons.
I don't know if the... was this guy supposed to be retired? Or was he still on the books as, you know, an active admiral? Because he didn't appear to be particularly active.
No, I don't really think he is active. I think he's... you know, I don't think they say whether he's out of retirement or not.
And I like the, you know, he obviously comes aboard the Enterprise carrying a bit of a secret, you know, from his medical perspective. And you can see he looks, you can tell it's of a certain age when, you know, when someone confronts the bad guy or, you know, the suspicious guy of the week. And they say, hey, you know, I'm now ready for your medical. He looks all shifty and he looks very, very... very likely to be hiding something, just in the way that he behaves.
Oh yeah.
He seemed to run a mile when Beverly suggested that he should go down for his physical.
Yeah, it was crap moment. Mm. Oh no, what am I going to do now? I mean, he is still the admiral. Okay, so now did you notice that in the video of the hostage information that Karnas was giving? I believe only one man can solve this. Did you notice on each side of that video screen, it looks like, you know, birds looking at the governor?
Is that right? I thought there's like a statue-y thing. Or am I...
It is a statue, but I mean, they look like birds. I mean, they were statues, but they look like birds to me. It's like big, ugly birds. Gray birds.
No, I didn't necessarily see that. Now, do you know who... Karnas? It's Karnas, right?
Karnas.
Do you know who he was in the original series?
He was someone in the original series.
He was someone in the original series from a big fan favorite episode, and he has a big fan favorite line when he confronts Scotty.
Really? No, I don't. Michael Patake.
Patakis. Yeah.
Let's see what Mr. Pataki has. Oh, yes. Okay. Really? The Klingon?
Yes. So this is the Klingon in The Trouble with Tribbles, where he I suppose he ends up starting a fight in the on K-7.
Yeah, because the Enterprise should be hauled away as garbage. Oh, okay. Now I know what you're talking about. You wouldn't see it in his face today. That's fascinating.
No, I think it must have been what would it have been?
A long time ago.
I suppose it's only 25 years or 22 years between the original series and the next gen. But yeah, he does look different from when he had a, you know, Fu Manchu in the 60s.
Yeah, Korax. Okay. Fascinating. Okay, yeah. Space Station K-7. Okay, so... Mordan 4 is having a tissy fit. They took the Federation Ambassador Hawkins and his staff hostage, and they're demanding a negotiator, and it must be Admiral Dead. Admiral Almost Dead, that is. Oh, a.k.a. Yeah, Mark Jameson. Yeah, I called him Admiral Dead. Admiral Almost Dead. But Picard is tasked to take Jameson to his final resting place. Oops, spoiler alert. Silly me. So, now let's talk about this futuristic space wheelchair. Okay, it doesn't look like any wheelchair we've ever seen before. I guess it could be like, I'm drawing a blank. What's the other wheelchair with the two blinky lights?
Oh, you mean, you mean from the menagerie?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
you mean
Pike's chair. There you go, Pike's chair.
I mean, it looked a little better than Pike's chair.
Yeah, but it didn't have any... Well, it did have lights. It had running lights on the bottom and the sides of it, so you're right, it was a little better. You could see in the... You could use them as a nightlight. So, but it was so big, so I wondered, what else could that chair possibly do besides move him around? How about maybe a replicator? You can make him food and drink. Maybe onboard heating and air conditioning.
I would imagine it has internet access at least.
Sure. I even go further to say maybe a holo generator. Shields that go up when somebody fires a phaser at them.
Yeah, and maybe a couple of phaser cannons on the side.
Yeah, they come out, and, or it's a I want to say convertible, but what's that? Anyway, you know, it changes to something else. Transformer. Maybe it's a transformer. You know, transform them into something else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but here's a question. They beam him up to the transporter room, and he's on the transporter pad. How do they plan to get that clunky wheelchair off the transporter pad?
That's right. There are stairs going up to the transporter pad. And I think he cut away, right?
So yes.
You don't have to deal with that issue.
Right.
Now, I assume it doesn't have wheels. I assume it's like a floaty.
It has
a floaty.
Oh, magic. I see what you're saying.
So I imagine it doesn't. It can handle bumps and stairs and things. A bit like the in Doctor Who. I don't know if you're aware of Doctor Who, but the Daleks. They're also these things that kind of hover along on the floor. That they have wheels, but they kind of move around. And for a long time, it was always the case that you could get away from a Dalek by running up the stairs because they didn't have an ability to tackle stairs.
Mm.
They did solve that eventually when they hovered up the stairs instead. And at that point, I suppose, you know, people were out of options.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how they're going to get that off. You know, Picard to security dispatched 6 strong men to get the Admiral off the transporter pad, please. Oh, just beam him, you know, somewhere else. Beam him to the bridge.
Yeah, beam him to his quarters.
Mm-hmm. But I guess, yeah, at the time, yeah, I mean, yeah, we're in TNG, so yeah, you can beam him anywhere he wants to go. Beam him right to the holodeck. Play one of Geordi's programs. Oh.
Actually, by the way, did you notice when he did, kind of, you know, immediately as he came aboard, he kind of throws down a bit of an ultimatum to Picard, and he says, you know, I'm the senior officer here, I am going to take charge of the mission, and you know, you can control the ship, but I will control the mission and the away team.
Yeah.
And you could tell a mile off that this was setting something up for later on.
Uh-huh.
You know, there was no reason for him to be mentioning that at this stage. And as a result, you kind of know that there's going to be a point where he tries it and says, look, I'm now taking control of the away team, Picard. This was, you know, this was the agreement. Just so that it gets nicely flashed up in lights. Mm-hmm. Within the teaser.
I believe it went something like this. It says, oh, and Picard, I run the show today. You're just a glorified extra. So don't expect to get top pay. It goes to me. I'm sure you're in agreement, right? Picard may be, but did you notice Riker wasn't? Picard may be in agreement, but he gives a death glare to Jameson.
He does. He does. He doesn't like, I suppose he doesn't like someone coming in on top of Picard. Mm-hmm. He thinks Picard's the, you know, the top dog around here.
That's right.
He's just waiting for Picard to die before taking over the captain's chair. And he doesn't like the fact there might be someone ahead of him now.
Or there's a different chair that's going to take over the captain's chair. Well, I mean, obviously, because he says, I'm in charge of the mission. You're in charge of the ship, but I'm in charge of the mission. And if you think about it, on the Enterprise, Picard is in charge of the ship, and Riker's usually in charge of the mission. Ha! Gotcha!
I mean, but also, to a certain extent, right, you... being in charge of the ship can override being in charge of the mission. Mm-hmm. Because Jameson says, I'm going to beam down now, and you can't do anything about it because I'm in charge of the mission. And Picard just says, yeah, sure, but we're heading at warp 9.5 in the opposite direction. You ain't beaming down nowhere. So I didn't see... Picard could easily trump him.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, you were talking about his old makeup, and I was actually thinking more like he kind of has this battered husband syndrome look to him, like his wife beats the hell out of him every day.
You think so?
Yeah, I don't know.
Actually, there was a bit early on in at the very, very start where he's beginning to show symptoms of pain. He kind of has a bit of a, you know, he has a bit of a throw around and goes, ooh, ah, and his wife comes over to him, and he manages to convince her very easily that it's nothing to be worried about. So, you know, his wife says, oh, are you okay? And, you know, this is an 85-year-old man. I assume if I was in that state, my loved ones would get me to a doctor. Uh-huh. But she just gets fobbed off with, oh, it'll pass, it's fine. And she's almost thinking, yep, that's good enough for me.
What kind of direction do you think it was that said, now, when you have this pain, grab your right arm. Don't grab your left arm, because that's where everybody has heart attacks. Grab your right arm. That way, the audience won't have a clue. What the heck is going on? What exactly is hurting him?
I didn't notice that.
Oh, yeah. It's always his right arm. I mean, he had his hand around his right chest, as if to say, you know, if he had it on his left, oh, hey, you might be having a heart attack. But because he put it on his, you know, he got his left hand under his right shoulder, it kind of makes it ambiguous. Now, you can have a heart attack with the deferral pain going down your right arm, but, it still makes you go, what the heck's wrong? Okay.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so... Well, Karnas has given some of the detail. Jameson was looking like he was about to flatline. Kind of had a look on his face like, I can't believe that I'm about to die. And Deanna's studying him intently. You know, it's almost like, how do I say? Maybe she's studying the wrong guy? Because it looked like both of them were full of crap. Him and Karnas.
Yes, no, I agree. And I don't think that Troy picks up very quickly on a lot of the deception and a lot of the stuff that she should clearly be able to read in this episode. She has a couple of points that are made, you know, certainly right at the beginning with Karnas, but she doesn't really follow anything through, and very quickly, you know, they're able to deceive her, or at least not have her influence or impact the plan or the scheme in any way. So I think it's a little bit of a fail for Troy's magic powers this week.
Right. Yeah, she may not have picked it up, but Detective Crusher did. She seemed to get it pretty quick. You know, she finds out the medical records the Admiral gave her is 2 months old, not 2 days old. So I was thinking first, you know, the Admiral's medical records, and then later the Diomedian scoured moss. I think Dr. Crusher is becoming one heck of a detective.
No, okay, I will accept that. But does it really matter that the records are 2 months old? I mean, I know he's an older man, and I know that he's also got an illness that might require, you know, monitoring. But, you know, 2 months, it's not as if it's going to be that different, right, than 2 days. I like the way that she says that she discovered it, because she basically says that the file name contained the date. Mm-hmm. You know, the way that she describes it, it's basically saying that, you know, he emailed me this Word document that states, you know, medical records 22nd of February, and that's what he emailed over to Crusher, and Crusher saw right through his deception, as if it was somehow, you know, not completely obvious that he was sending over older medical records.
So if he had his wits about him, he'd just change the name of the file name and make it 2 months, or make it 2 days old.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So what do you think about him getting out of the chair while on the bridge to kind of like stumble to the con area?
First of all, I'm not entirely sure why Picard needs to offer the con to the Admiral for a start. I think, you know, would you like to take the con doesn't particularly come across as an obvious thing to say. And I can't remember, maybe I'm wrong, I can't remember him offering the con to any other Admiral that happens to be visiting.
No.
Like, you know, he said, oh, Admiral Nechev, you know, do you want to sit down at a con and... You know, you might get a slap for suggesting that's what they want to do. I mean, he's paid his dues and he's had a 50-year career, and he doesn't want to be back at con replacing a guy straight out of the academy.
You know, you mentioned something, and this is a side note. You mentioned Admiral Nechayev, and on the Lou Trek Show, we actually interviewed Natalia Nagulich, and I'm still in contact with her on Facebook. I wonder if she'd be willing to maybe come on and review one of those episodes that she's in with us. That would be pretty cool.
Actually, I have to say, I think Nechayev was a great Admiral.
Oh, loved her.
I think she was super. But she doesn't turn up until...
Yeah.
Wait, it's the end of towards the, it must be season 5 or 6.
Right.
I off the top of my head.
Yeah, we got time to get that one. But
actually, what we haven't mentioned so far is that this is obviously the first admiral you see in the Next Generation era, and it's the first dodgy admiral you see in the Next Generation era. So it's you know, good admirals none, dodgy admirals one. And maybe we should keep score of how this goes, because I think it's, you generally see more dodgy admirals than good admirals.
Okay, I guess I can do that. Let me see here. Score good admirals versus bad admirals. And if I'm going to do that, I might as well go ahead and do good holodeck.
Yeah, broken holodeck versus working holodeck.
Versus everyone can die. Bad holodeck. Okay. So I'll have to, and which it ain't bad. We're only on episode 16, or excuse me. Yeah, we're on episode 16. It won't be that bad because we're on episode 16, so I can go back to the previous 15 real quick and kind of make scores, because I did have one and I can't find the file, darn it. It was how many people died, you know, how many crew members died. And I had one for TOS that actually went all the way down to the end, and I had the exact number of people that died on the ship where they say, you know, this ensign died, or we saw this ensign died, and it was like something 0.5. Something and a half, and you're probably wondering, well, who was the half? Well, the half actually went to the dog that would, you know, they were on the planet and they couldn't beam up, and the dog with the coney head, they beamed up and,
from the enemy within.
Yeah, and so, you know, one of the dogs that they beamed up died, so I counted that as a 0.5.
didn't both dogs die?
Oh, you're right, they did.
Because they split the dog, and then they try to bring the dog back together. And
well, maybe it was because you know, you can't quite consider a dog a whole human, so I figured half a person.
Maybe.
That's irrelevant. But maybe I can do something like that again.
I mean, I think TOS has a more kill die rate than TNG. Certainly at the beginning. Knowing about the red shirts, you do kind of keep an eye out whenever I'm rewatching, and you see a lot of the shows early on, and you know, things like, you know, What a Little Girl's Made Of. They have classic examples of, please beam me down to red shirts. They'll be killed.
Yes,
immediately.
Immediately, yes.
And they both get taken out by the stupidest of things without making anyone aware of their situation. And I mean, also the man trap is horrendous for this as well, where they take out 3 or 4 of the Enterprise crew basically by beaming more and more people down to the planet to be killed by the salt monster.
Right.
All good stuff.
Oh,
all
absolutely. Or how about the there's one episode, I can't think of the name. See, Brian Baker would know all this. He'd know it for me. But anyway, you can't think of the name where Rock, you know, tosses his guy down this bottomless pit, and all you hear is, and he said it's bottomless. There's no bottom. What the heck does that mean? How could it be bottomless? Do you think the guy lived for the next 2 or 3 days continually screaming? What am I screaming for? There's no point. I'm not getting saved. Bottomless. Okay. Anyway, we got to get back to the.
So back to the episode.
So the adverse, you know, what would the adverse effects of this drug be? Well, it makes you younger. It turns you into a horny dog. They say that aliens aren't allowed this process because it's very bad on you. It just, you don't survive this. So why did he want to take it in the first place?
I mean, also, I think there's a bit of discontinuity here. Actually, maybe it's not discontinuity. What I think it is, he's obviously been thinking about this. He gets the drug in order to make himself younger. I mean, there is a passing reference of that he didn't. He's obviously in a incapacitated state, and his wife is having to look after him. And he does mention that it was killing him to see her have to do all of this. And to be honest with you, there's a relatively decent sci-fi story to be told about the sacrifice of people having to look after people when they're close to death. And, you know, you can frame it in such a way that potentially this is a, you know, it can be a compelling story. I think it's just so tacked on here that I really don't think it goes anywhere. And I just couldn't... So he had this thing in the background that he was trying to, you know, keep this, you know, reverse his illness and become young again. And then apparently we're led to believe that when he found out about the mission, he, you know, took double dosages and then he went, you know, he really went for it, which eventually is to his undoing. But, you know, a lot of these issues aren't really discussed in the episode. It's just that he happens to... I mean, it's almost as if the only reason why they have the de-aging is because someone thought it would be cool to have de-aging without anything else, without anything, you know, any other commentary or thought around it.
And he upended the bottle.
Yes. So,
even when he looked 20 years younger, when she said, "You look like you did 20 years ago." I still look at him and go, "Yeah, but he still looks about 40 years older than you are."
Actually, I had a point where I started thinking about whether or not the story would have worked had it been had the couple been younger, so like much younger. So if we're talking about someone in their 30s and someone has an illness that has made them very, you know, crippled, or, you know, to the extent they need a lot of help, but not necessarily, you know, looking comically old like a 90-year-old, and I wondered whether that would be a better way of phrasing the story. And I think it potentially would have been, I think in one way you gain, because the characters aren't so old, you don't have this idea that, you know, you don't have this idea that there's only limited returns. You are talking about someone that has had their life cut short rather than someone who's at the end of their life, but this happens to be incapacitated. But then the thing that I do quite appreciate about this episode, and it doesn't come up that often, at least we do here have a, you know, we don't have a an extremely young wife attached to the Admiral. And I think that had they gone with the thought that I had about having a younger couple, then you're into territory here where you're talking about a very, very young woman having to play the Admiral's partner. And you know, all too often, even in Star Trek, you only have portrayal of women of a certain age, and it's always very young women. You know, you even see it when Picard has relationships. You know, Picard has relationships with people 20 years younger than him, and sometimes I think that just gets a little bit silly. So, you know, I think as a storytelling device, it would have been better had they been younger. But at the same time, I don't want there only to be a portrayal of young women in Star Trek. I would like to see the older women, and I don't know. So I, at the end of the day, at that point, I stopped thinking and got back onto my day job.
Right. Well, I don't know. Okay, so we go to a commercial break, and we come back, and I thought, wait a tick. Why is Jameson in the captain's chair? Picard is in Riker's chair, and Riker's in Troy's chair. You know, I think this is one of two times that we actually see the captain not in the captain's chair. Can you think of the other time?
Is this whilst the captain stood on the bridge?
Yeah, he was still on the bridge, but he wasn't in his chair.
No, but I mean, you're asking about the other time. Is that when the captain's on the bridge?
Yeah.
Because something that immediately came to me is when Worf takes over, right, in The Emissary.
No.
Portrays that.
That's fine.
But what's the other time? I can't think off the top of my head, I don't think.
It's when we get McDuff.
So McDuff?
Mm-hmm. Yep, when they go to fight their mortal enemies, the Lysians. Yeah.
Okay, why isn't the captain in his chair?
Well, I'm trying to think of the name of it. If I can...
Conundrum.
Conundrum, yes. Because before they knew their identities, nobody knew who anybody was. And so, you're right, in Worf, it was Worf that thought he was in command because...
He is also well-decorated.
Yeah, he is well-decorated. And so we see Worf in the captain's chair, and the captain actually at con at that moment. So I'm thinking as far as I know, the only two times when Picard is on the bridge, he's actually not in his proper chair, is these two episodes. I can't think of any others.
There are obviously occasions when Picard's not on the bridge.
Right, and that's
fine. I think that's different.
Yeah, totally different. I mean, we see Picard actually on the bridge, but not in his captain's chair.
Okay. I mean, I have to say, I Conundrum's a great episode.
Oh, it is.
It is. I think we've said this for the last couple of weeks. We have a ramble about what we've watched, and then something comes up far in the future, and we both go, that was a great episode.
Yes. Yes, it's season 5, number 14, so we've still got 4 seasons to go to get there.
Get your names down.
Right. Yes. Yeah, that's a good point. Everybody, I'll tell you what. I said at one point that, we were going to do them one season at a time, but actually, now I'm going to open it up. The only one... Oh, something? Can I make an announcement?
Go ahead.
Okay. One thing you guys... I did on the main webpage at loutrekshow.com. I can't do this on TrekMate because I don't really know how it will work. So I'm going to get with the guys at TrekMate and see if this is possible. But at loutrekshow.com, at the top of the page, under the banner, there's something called TNG Schedule Season 1. And I'm going to put the schedule up one season at a time. Yeah, I'm going to put them up one at a time. So if you go there and you look, you'll see who's in the schedule for that particular episode, what day we're going to be recording that particular episode, and that way you get an idea if you want to join us for one. But here's another thing. Even though it's only going to be one season at a time, I'm just going to open it up. If anybody wants any episode, tell me the season number, the episode number, and the name, and I'll put you in. And if nobody has it, you've got it. If somebody else has it, well, it's too difficult. We handled having Bridget and Sean on, 2 people, but if it's 2 people that aren't next to each other, 4 people on the same show is just a little difficult. So we'd like to limit it to 3 different Skype connections. So take a look at that. Tell me what episode or season, episode number, and name you want. We'll put it on. I can't tell you when it's going to be recorded. It could be 2 years from now, but we'll put you on. Anyway.
So, Lou, it's unclear to me. Is this offered on a first-come, first-served basis, or is this if someone else has got it, then there's a fight to the death to see who's actually going to be on the show?
We'll have to let them know. It's first-come. Whoever asks for it first, you will get it. So, but, don't go crazy and say you want this one, and just pile off a list of episodes. I don't want to say I want to limit it to one person per season. You can only come on one time a season. I'm not going to do that. But if it gets out of hand, we will. But right now, we only have 4 people totally committed to the whole series at this point. So the likelihood of that even being an issue is pretty remote. So tell me what episodes you want, and we'll get you on. Now, there are things like the Klingon episode. We have one coming up, Heart of Glory. Well, I'm bringing Denimor on for that. His persona has always been the Klingon. So for the Klingon episodes, we'll probably have Denimor. But, beyond that, just give me an email and let me know. LoutrekShow@gmail.com or... I think it's battlebridgepodcast@gmail.com. I'm not sure. Okay, so let's go on. The Mordenites still live by family tribal units, and 2 tribes were fighting, so Jameson gave weapons to one side, but also gave them to the other side, which was his interpretation of the Prime Directive, and that plunged him into 40 years of civil war, killing millions. Obviously, we all know the Prime Directive would have forbidden him from giving anyone weapons. I'm not exactly sure why they want him dead. Maybe it's because they thought he was given one side and not the other, obviously. But here's the thing, like you said earlier. The weapons run out of power. So for 40 years, they were in 40 years of civil war. When the weapons ran out, what'd they do for the rest of the 38 years? Throw rocks at each other?
No, I mean, that's true. And, you don't necessarily have to have the weapons in play. It's just, I suppose, the trigger of the original event. But actually, I have a point to raise about this, when it comes to light, that so it comes to light that there aren't any hostages being held at the rebels' place. Karnas has the hostages, so he kind of comes clean to Picard, and he tells them, you know, what the story was and what happened and how, you know, he solved the hostage situation 45 years ago by giving weapons to one side, and then he gave weapons to the other side once he was, you know, out of the way, and you know that was taken as a betrayal, which is why, you know, they're after him now. Now Admiral Jameson explicitly mentions that he falsified records to Starfleet. He states that, you know, he did this and he falsified records. And I mean, keeping up with a bit of a tradition we had a few episodes back, admittedly, this is where the episode should end. He states, "Oh, but I then falsified records." Picard then says, "Thank you," throws him in the brig, tells Starfleet what's happened, and then they're out of there. There's nothing else to do. You certainly don't allow this man to go on a rescue mission, and you certainly don't continue to, you know, play out this situation. At this point, he comes forward and he admits he's completely guilty of, at very least, you know, lying to his superiors, at worst of breaking the Prime Directive and, you know, igniting a civil war. This guy should not be in play anymore. He should be out of there. And instead, we kind of see, you know, we basically see Picard almost ignore the fact that he falsified records and he, you know, he gave weapons to both sides and all the rest of it.
Good point. I didn't think of that. Yeah, absolutely. He should never have been in charge anymore. Okay.
And then, I mean, and I suppose kind of to get towards the end of this show, I don't know if you want to rush through it, but, you know, they pop down, they try to rescue, there's a bit of a firefight, they head back to the ship after not being able to get through. They're then given an ultimatum that Jameson and others need to beam down immediately, otherwise they're going to start executing the hostages. Mm-hmm. They beam down. Jameson takes responsibility for what he did and, you know, croaks it.
Yeah, you're missing a couple points. I mean, let me back you up a couple steps. One is, I do know what the sound of the kill phaser sounds like, Mr. Data. Really? The kill setting has a different sound than the stun setting?
And also, the issue is that there are different weapons, right, out there. So let's just assume you put this into reality, and instead of a phaser, you actually have like a rifle. Depending on the size of the rifle and how powerful it is, they could all be set to kill, but they will sound different. And I think they also mentioned in the Deep Space Nine episode that, you know, Klingon disruptors sound different to phasers, and Bajoran phasers sound different still. Mm-hmm. I didn't particularly buy this. I'm not, you know, yeah. I've heard the sound before. Thank you, Mr. Data. It's a bit sloppy,
clunky. And then we bring down the overall proof that this is Admiral Jameson. Here, I'll show you. And we see three pictures. Three pictures is all they show of Jameson to show the de-aging. You know, like Picard's man-crush detective on The Big Goodbye would say, I ain't gonna fall for that kind of line of guff.
I actually do have, although I am unfortunately trying to push us out of the episode by now, I do have on my list of things to discuss, he shows three pictures. And it is old man, younger man that looks nothing like the older man, and then younger man still that might possibly be his son. But there's not a huge link. You know, it's not as if they had a continual footage of the guy de-aging kind of day by day and, you know, showing a continuum.
Right.
It's just picture one, picture two, picture three.
See?
Well, I'm convinced.
I'm convinced. But what about the... Oh, no, he wasn't convinced until he saw the blood cut.
Well, which is... That's easy enough to fake, isn't it?
But here's another thing. Even if it's easy enough to fake, he's de-aging. His cells are getting younger. Why would the blood cut still even be there?
Okay, that is a very valid point. I think that there's, you know, if you're going to be regenerated and you're, you know, you're coming back, right? Your hair is coming back in places where you didn't have hair, and the color is coming back. Are you saying that a little cut's not going to be healed?
Exactly.
That doesn't quite feel right. But even if it didn't heal, right? He was asking him questions to test him, and he didn't believe the answers to the questions. He thought that he had just been well prepared. But it's surely easier to prepare someone by giving them a little cut than to give them a 52-hour presentation of his life and all the possible questions that might be asked. So I don't think he was a. There's no reason to take that particular piece of evidence and believe it above any of the other pieces.
There's another thing. With the dermal regenerator, why couldn't Crusher or any medical doctor just get rid of that thing altogether?
Absolutely true.
Okay.
Absolutely true.
So anyway, let's go ahead and end this a little bit here. Admiral Jameson dies, still seeing gold in the gray-haired wife. And Karna says, "Rest, Jameson. Your long night and mine are over." Hostages will be freed, and he's prepared to be cooperative. I wonder what his sentence would be. Did he have to come with Picard, or did he go on continue running the planet? We don't know. But Jameson was buried on Mordan at the request of his widow. Why would she want that? Did she stay on the planet and come to visit him every Memorial Day, or... why would she want her husband's remains on a alien planet?
Personally, I mean, she was seemed to be. First of all, she seemed to be disinterested in him being unwell, and then she seemed to be actively hostile towards him getting better. Mm-hmm. I think she was in it for the insurance money.
Ah, the replicator credits, huh? Must be. All right, because I don't think they have any gold pressed latinum at this point.
Okay. I did like one of the very last lines is when Karnas does say to Jameson, he said, die by your own weapon. Mm. You know, there are little bits and pieces where they nearly stumble upon interesting things to say about, you know, society and negotiations and peace treaties and things like that. And they stumble upon it, and they try their best to ignore it and stay away from the interesting stuff.
Okay. All right, well, it's time to set course for Isis 3. I'm sure it's a lovely planet where we'll enjoy the warm climate despite the name, Isis 3. But that's where they're heading next, was Isis 3. And since we know they don't get to Isis 3, so, well, at least, you know, obviously they might, but we don't get to know. But... okay, well, anyway, it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being, well, just bad, and 5 being just unrealistic, as Ben would put it. But I'm going to, you know, actually, all the de-aging drug in the universe won't make this old dog seem any more youthful and fresh. It was another stupid story, obviously holding, you know, they're holding good stories back for a later date. The de-aging drug that most likely always ends in a bitter death. So, you know, what's the true point of having it? Perhaps it works on the beings that made it, but not aliens so much. Since Jameson caused a situation 40 years ago, does a Federation try to mediate a better peace? Or do we simply warp away, wishing them the best? Because obviously, Jameson did this without the Federation. So do they feel like they still need to do something about it? Or should they go, well, we're sorry he did this. He did it without our permission. Good luck. Wish you the best. Bye-bye. Does Annie with the golden hair try to get the process for herself to grow younger? I hope not. Or perhaps maybe she's so grief-stricken that she kills herself next week to be with Jameson again. We don't know. Or perhaps she marries an even younger man, since the older men, you know, don't hang on very long. Does Picard perhaps get himself the de-aging drug? I mean, he knows where it's at. He knows how to get it. He may consider it someday. We don't know. There's just so many questions. But overall, it's not a story that I really care much about. So I'm sorry to say, this is going to get my second one for the season. That's it. A one.
Ouch! One. Okay, I mean, my thoughts are, I think that, as I mentioned, there are two ideas here that are not in any way connected. One is like the fountain of youth idea, and you know, trying to, you know, become young and the implications of that, and you know, we've seen that a little bit before, but here it seems to be a tacked on, you know, piece of the storyline. There is an interesting original piece of piece of the story, which is, you know, is Jameson responsible for what he did, and can he be held responsible for what he did, considering that, you know, this was him having to make a very tough call and moral choice to save the lives of some hostages, and you know, at what point is it his responsibility how people acted long after he had left the planet? There's also the question about him getting his comeuppance and him having to answer for, you know, how he left the situation all those years ago. Unfortunately, this episode tries its best not really to handle those pieces particularly well. I think it's a good kind of little concept. I think they bottle it by not having any proper judgment on Jameson and instead have him just, you know, die and effectively get out of jail free. I'm not going to be as harsh as a one, but it will be kind of like a one plus one for at least a little bit of a nice concept, and you know, a nice genus of at least an interesting story that will kind of hopefully would have made people think, or at least it would have done had it been better executed. So I will give Too Short a Season a two.
Okay. It's a two. Short of a season. Okay. All right, then.
Dear, I didn't see that.
You didn't, huh?
It's a too short of a season.
Yes.
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Saucer section reports 6 more children are gone.
Wesley and the children of the Enterprise become kidnapped victims.
You've just committed an act of utter barbarity.
In a desperate plot to rebuild a dying planet.
We want to go home.
I will never let her go.
Mysterious alien defenses.
Shields inoperable, sir.
Leave the crew helpless to save them on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you for listening, and join us next week as we review Season 1, Episode 17, and that is Where the Bow Breaks. I'm James from London.
I'm Old Man Lou, not gonna get young anytime soon, from Nebraska. And good night.